Now, the chemists, the electronic engineers, electrical engineers, and so on have developed what are called SNP chips that basically are a series of electronic beads that have an affinity for specific sequences of the DNA. Okay? So as you hear about SNP chips, basically they're just a chip that is available to detect those genetic variation among cattle. And so when you or the seed stock producer you're buying your bulls from, or however we're doing it through the industry that Matt will talk a little bit more about, a hair follicle, a blood sample, a semen sample that has DNA in it, is chopped up, is incubated with the SNP chip, okay? The SNP chip then has a specific receptor, if you will, or affinity for those sequences. And as that happens, then the SNP chip lights up. It's not that simple, but indicates that certain DNA sequences are present. So in the beginning, there were only a few SNPs, or again, single nucleotide polymorphisms known. And so we started with these 5K chips. Then 50K, okay, more information, more understanding, larger chips, more electronics, up to 450K chips. And Matt tells me that as we communicated that the research community is using chips or SNPs, okay, that many specific sequences, up to close to a million. 650,000, 770,000 SNPs to give further reference and further information to the animals. Think of it like this, and I saw in another presentation at another time someone use this analogy of our cell phone range. When we first began in the cell phone range, there were only certain areas across the country that were where you could get cell phone. But as time has gone on and that industry has matured and developed, a lot more coverage. There are only a few areas. And those of you, I think most of us carry cell phones, and occasionally we'll get to an area where we may not be in the map, but in general the coverage is great. And so the comparison here is that as the coverage increased, a greater chance of finding someone. If I want to call Ryan Romero and he's in a particular area, then I can find him because he's on the map. Same principle allows with the genomes. The more beads, the more SNPs that are discovered, and how they relate to the particular characteristics of the animal, the more chance I am of finding the genes or the associated genes that allow a decision. And so this is just an illustration or an ad from Pfizer, who's coupling closely with the Angus Association. Low-density chips only light up a few SNPs. However, high-density chips light up more SNPs, more information about the particular animal. Okay, so with all of this, what's being done in the industry? The first example I look to is the curly calf syndrome, okay? There were some genetic abnormalities, genetic problems that were identified a few years ago in our cattle industry. And it wasn't long until, based on the information that was already in some data banks, that mutation was identified. Dr. Beaver at the University of Illinois, with a relatively small number of animals, 80 animals, and in about a four-month period of time was able, through this technology and using some of the tools we've talked about, to isolate and therefore selection against those traits, and understanding that has occurred fairly quickly as a real boon to our industry. A second example, Larry Keene at the Meat Animal Research Center, along with other researchers, did what they call a 2,000 bull project, where bulls from various breeds were genotyped, or this technology was used on in their behalf, and created a genetic distance between breeds. Not surprising, I think, confirming a lot of the things that we would we'd recognize, the origins of the breeds and the way they were selected on the various continents, and they developed, and how they were developed, closer or farther relationship. The one I'd point to is the up here kind of in the middle, you see HL, okay? Hereford line 1 and its relationship to Hereford in general because of that selection pressure over the length of that line 1 breeding project, still related but genetically diverse compared to the Hereford line. Just another example of the things that are being done. And another, and this was one of the early ones, the gene star, okay, carcass traits. Whether they had one star, two star, or no stars was an indicator of their ability to marvel, and that was early steps toward this genetic genome understanding. We now have an industry evolving, basically two. There's a few more than two, but Pfizer Animal Genetics and Igenity. Igenity is the other. This is just off their Igenity website, giving you an indication, kind of a check sheet, a menu, if you will, of how much do I want to pay and what do I want to learn. And so blowing that up and realizing you probably can't read that very much, but some very preliminary or well, actually an Igenity profile, $38 per animal, per sample. Some other traits that are listed on that profile. One here at the bottom that says add genetic or add parentage of to the Igenity profile for commercial replacement heifers for $10. So there's the menu. You need to then decide, is this something I want to pursue? How is it going to help me in my breeding program? American Angus Association, some of you were in the CAB meeting Monday night this week, and they indicated that they have a commercial herd application called Gene Max that will focus mainly on traits pertaining to commercial herds. Looks like it's going to be priced at $15 to $20 a sample. They expect to have that out in the next couple of months. Okay, now that we've talked about the process of genomics, certainly we all understand that the main driver has been for the last 25 years and will continue to be, and Matt will emphasize this, EPDs, expected progeny difference. We've made a lot of progress with this by understanding that independent of any DNA information. And let's not lose sight of that. The challenge, though, is that process becomes fairly slow and meticulous because it involves proving progeny. You know, the bull has to sire an animal, the animal has to be proven, has to grow, has to be tested and evaluated. Progeny tests cost about, according to one estimate, about $25,000 a bull. And only one in eight bulls that get through that graduation program of progeny testing ultimately become an active bull. So some of the advantage of these marker-assisted selections are the rapidity or the speed that these things can do, especially for traits that are expensive to screen. And the selection potentially can be done at a much earlier age. Not exclusively, because it doesn't mean we're not going to have to continue and need to continue to do the conventional comparisons, because DNA is based on relationships with phenotype, and so those will continue. But the number of progeny tested may be less. Certainly accuracies, as you look at the literature and so on, you'll see that the EPDs, the accuracy, and Matt will talk more about this, are increased by coupling them with the molecular or the DNA information that we've spoken about. the relationship between the phenotype and genotype, basically that's what I was trying to articulate, is that the training of these computer models and the statistical models requires a live animal. requires the clear association between the biology and the expression of those genes in the animal. One of the weaknesses, if you call it a weakness, and we're as an industry probably work through that, is that they appear to be breed specific, that these SNPs for certain traits are specific to certain breeds, and so it, and those who are working in that arena understand that a lot more than I do, but realize that there will be some growing pains and development as we work through this.